Blog Talk Radio.
Ohio. My dad was a bus driver. My mom was a community organizer.
I remember sitting around the kitchen table with my brother and me, and they talked about the importance of communities coming together to improve everyone's work lives. And that's essentially why I believe that my work at AFSCME is so important. This should not be a country that's rushing to the bottom, paying substandard wages or getting rid of folks' benefits who have worked a lifetime to receive pensions, and now pensions are under attack. We should figure out ways to grow the middle class, to support working families across the country rather than rushing to the bottom. It's clearly a divide and conquer mentality by a number of these governors and a number of folks that are elected representatives here in Washington, D.C., where they want to blame the economy and blame the problems that exist right now on public service workers, and that's just wrong. And we're fighting back on that.
We're talking with Lee Saunders. It's a newsmaker interview with the new president of AFSCME. That's one of the largest public workers unions in the country. That's the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, or AFSCME. You mentioned pensions, Vermont. I was going to ask about that later, but I'll bring it up now. There are those who argue, political leaders, who both Democrats and Republicans, who argue that their jurisdictions just cannot afford the level of pension benefits that have been agreed to. I think California Governor Democrat Jerry Brown called pension reform imperative for his state's fiscal health. Voters in San Diego and San Jose, California, have approved measures to curb city pensions. How do you respond to that?
Well, number one, I think we've got to get some facts on the table. The average pensioner for AFSCME, one who receives a pension who has worked 30, 35 years, is $18,000 to $19,000 a year. That's not exorbitant. Those folks have paid into their pension programs. The state or the local governments don't do it all on their own. Our people pay in to those programs, and so they deserve an adequate pension that will satisfy them in their retiring years.
So, is your main argument that this is a contract, which doesn't
well,
can't
it is
a contract. Be abrogated
it, it,
by
it
one party,
contract,
or is it social fairness that they deserve it?
It's both. It's a contract that state and local governments have entered into. They've clearly bad investments have been made, but those investments are starting to increase once again, and the pension funds are becoming stronger once again. And we don't believe that folks should be penalized by reducing those benefits and taking away their pension.
But do you argue if the states or other jurisdictions argue that they simply can't afford it? What do you say, that the alternative is that, or bankruptcy, or cutting services to the point where those communities become unlivable? What do you say?
Well, we don't think that it's going to get to that because those investments are starting to increase once again. But let me say this. I mean, we aren't burying our head in the sand on this. As a matter of fact, when I became president, one of the first things that I announced was that we really needed to talk about pension reform in this country. We needed to bring in experts, not only from those within our unions, but experts outside, so we can talk about what kind of pension should be paid. And I don't think it's an AFSCME problem. It's not a public service union problem. It's a problem for all Americans, all working families who are seeing their pensions decimated.
You alluded to this earlier, so I wanted to talk more about your analysis of this. You mentioned Governor Scott Walker in Wisconsin. You mentioned Governor Kasich in Ohio. A mixed record there. AFSCME helped defeat an Ohio referendum that limited collective bargaining for public workers. But in June, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, one of the most high-profile sort of political battles I think that we have in the country right now along with the presidential race, he survived a recall election that was driven by public employee unions. How do you analyze those two different scenarios? What do you think happened there?
Well, first of all, you have to take a look at the recall effort in Wisconsin. One of the things that we found was that folks really don't like recalls. They believe that if, in fact, a person is elected, they need to serve out their term, not unless they're doing something so terrible. So people believe that even though they disagreed with his policies, that he deserved to stay out his full term. But it was not a loss. We were able to regain the Senate through the recall process. So the kinds of programs and legislation that the governor is going to try to put forth, he's going to have to go through the Senate now, and the Senate is in the hands of working families, and we're going to be able to fight back on that. So that was a victory for us there. In Ohio, it was not a recall. It was a referendum, and it was a referendum on the right of collective service workers to have collective bargaining in that state. We were able to get more than a million signatures there to put that on the ballot, and because it was a sole issue, when people understood the importance and the value of workers having the opportunity to sit down at the table, talk about their wages and benefits and working conditions, then people understood the importance of that, and by a 2-to-1 margin, folks said that public service workers should have the right to collective bargaining in that state.
So you feel that when the issue is collective bargaining rights as opposed to an individual or some other issue, you feel?
I think Ohio proved that. If you look at the state of Florida, where they were trying to privatize public services in that state. They started off with corrections, and then they were going to go to all of state service. We were able to beat back that attempt in the legislature with moderate Republicans who supported our position that you should not privatize state services. So we're victorious there.
Well, thank you for coming in and taking the time to speak with us early in your tenure. We do have to talk about the presidential election. And one of the reasons this relates to the Wisconsin story is that one of the factors that people believe may have been relevant in Wisconsin was the very large sums of money that were spent on that race. It's been reported that AFSCME's already endorsed President Obama, by the way. The New York Times has reported that the union plans to spend close to $100 million on election efforts across the country. Is that true? But given how much money is pouring into campaigns on both sides, is that enough to make your voice heard, even as large of a number as that sounds
well,
like it is?
Let me tell you, we've got to play not only in the national election, we're going to play in the state and local government elections also. I'm not going to put a dollar amount on it. We're going to do what we have to do.
Well, why wouldn't you give a figure? I mean, these are the people who do the people's business. Why wouldn't you
Because I don't have a figure right now. I mean, we're going to analyze. We're going to look at what needs to be done. These are extremely important elections across the country, not only in Washington for the presidential election, but the governors and state legislatures. And we're going to spend what we must spend to get our voices heard and to support working families all across this country.
One other thing I did meant to ask you about: you happen to be the first African American president in the history of AFSCME. Is that significant to you?
Well, sure.
And what does it mean? What
sure,
do you think the significance is?
Well, personally, it's a huge honor for me. It's in my gut. It's in my heart. It's in my soul. And I was a public servant. I was a state employee in Ohio before I moved to Washington, D.C., and began working for AFSCME. So I understand the importance of public service. I was in New York City running one of our largest affiliates when 9/11 hit, and I saw those towers crumble. And I saw public service workers not run away from Ground Zero, but they ran to it, risking their lives to support those folks who have been affected at Ground Zero. We were there. I saw it firsthand. So there's a passion in me about the importance of public service, and I'm going to carry that forward every single day.
It's a part of the issue, though, that public sector work has been a critical part of the entry into the middle class of African Americans and other ethnic minorities.
That's
and I do wonder whether you feel that race is a part of the conversation around the views toward public sector workers, or not.
You look at the statistics, and 21% of African Americans work for state and local government. State and local governments are the largest employer for African Americans across this country. Almost 700,000 jobs have been lost in the public service, so it affects African Americans at a higher rate than other workers, and we're concerned about that. I mean, that has been the way where African-American families have been able to move into the middle class. Unfortunately, that middle class is shrinking. Rather than tearing it apart and continuing to watch it shrink, we've got to consider ways and develop ways in which we see the middle class grow. And we believe that President Obama is espousing the right ways, rebuilding the middle class, rather than continuing to support the top 1% of this country where they're seeing more wealth and they're seeing more power at the expense of working families in the middle class.
Lee Saunders is the new president of the Public Service Employee Union, AFSCME. That is the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. The union represents more than 1.4 million active workers, 1.6 million people overall. He was kind enough to join us here in our Washington, D.C. studios. Lee Saunders, thank you for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
It was a very good interview.
Yeah, it was.
Very
yeah.
articulate.
It was.
Yeah, I liked really what he had to say. I hope that he can lead AFSCME over the next few years and increase our base. We need to have more people in unions. We need to have more union jobs, because as union jobs are erased or those jobs are diminished, that reduces the middle class.
Right now we're going to call Larry and hopefully he'll answer. Larry Dorman, Public Affairs Coordinator for AFSCME Union.
Council. Hi, Larry. How are you? It's
hey,
Lila.
Hey, Lila. How are you doing?
Hi, Larry.
I'm just fine, and Leo's with me. We just
Hi, Leo. How are you?
We just had a little audio piece on interview with NPR with Larry with Lee Saunders, our new president.
Great. How did it sound?
Oh, he was excellent. Very, very good. Articulate guy, and he seems to speak from the heart. Did you get a chance to hear him speak at the convention?
Yeah, well, I know the piece you're talking about, and, you know, he's been to Connecticut a couple of times and spoken to him, not since he was elected, when he was the second-in-command. And last year when we had the Reverend Al Sharpton in New Haven, we had a rally on the streets and a speech or rally within one of the churches. And President Saunders accompanied Mr. Sharpton and spoke to our members and the public, and the reporters. Very, you know, articulate, passionate guy, as you say. So,
yeah, I was impressed by his interview with on NPR.
Yeah, I thought he did a great job.
That's the one we played.
And his number one priority, of course, as you have said also, is to expand our base, to develop more union jobs, because union jobs are the entree into the middle class, and it's an important, solid part of American culture.
Since I wanted to mention to you, too, since we last talked, Larry, we had a lady named Judy Ross.
Yeah.
Was her name. And she was with the, she is the founder of the Media Action Center out in Wisconsin, actually. She's actually, I believe she's in Sacramento.
She's out in California.
She's involved. She was really heavily involved with the unions in Ohio and Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And especially in trying to get them fair coverage on the recall votes and on the elections.
And she
she found out that what she did is she actually prepared a lawsuit against the five biggest radio stations in Wisconsin because they refused to give airtime to the union people or to the pro recall people. All right. So and by law and through the FCC, they're supposed to 60 days before an election, you're supposed to have fair and equal time
balance. Yep.
On radio stations and television. So this thing may wind up going to the Supreme Court, which is kind of interesting, no? But this is the kind of happening. I'm sorry, go ahead,
not
Larry.
Surprising, unfortunately, not surprising to hear that she's had that struggle. And, you know, that is part of the problem. And her new president.
But she's backing unions big time. And she honestly believes that this is what should happen. And, fair and balanced kind of thing, especially during the election process.
So not only did we have to fight the pouring in of money, but also unequal airtime 60 days before that election made it very, very tough on the opposition.
And you know, this is a problem we're constantly battling, and it's
happening here too. Yeah, look what they did with what's his face, Roland. He was backing candidates again.
Right.
That's how he got in trouble.
Yep.
I haven't heard any more about that, though. Have you heard anything Roland's problem, any more about it?
Yeah, he's seen, Ken Krajewski, who's an independent journalist and guy who, and I say this with all admiration, likes to stir the pot and agitate in the best sense of the word. He's filed the FCC complaint, and it's really sad to hear actually former current politicians, legislators who go on Roland's show. He's a bad guy.
He really is. And for him to have that show and that airtime is boggles the mind.
Look, ultimately, it's a sad commentary on WTIC. You know, this was a station that was well-respected historically for its commitment to its news coverage. You had veteran guys like Walt Dibble. Many of your people listening here may not know that name, but just a tremendous radio journalist, broadcaster. And so, you know, really it's sad that stations like TIC are pandering.
They're part of the Clear Channel now, aren't they?
Yeah, I think they're part of Clear Channel.
I know they're all doing Boomba, so.
Yep.
That's exactly
what they are, and they're making money, and you know they do it by having the hate mongers on, and this is
and they got that Bicevich
battle,
Bicevich in the morning, you know, so they don't have really any liberal or even moderate programming on the station anymore.
They're just a right wing propaganda, part of the right wing propaganda machine.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, they're the largest radio station in the state. You know, 50,000 watts. So
they have a lot of coverage. But I want to talk a little bit about what's happening in New London with the firefighters, and I wondered if you had any information on that, Larry.
I've been following it. I haven't spoken with them, but obviously. The city is facing, like so many others, economic challenges. They've gone as far as to lay off firefighters and police. So the firefighters have gone to court, and it's an ongoing situation. But I think I commend them for standing up and fighting for public safety. Not just for their jobs, but for public safety. I mean, I want to be very clear here that I don't want to see anybody laid off. So
I've been trying to figure this one out. Not the New London firefighters, but the thing in Scranton, Pennsylvania, where they forced all the firemen and policemen to work for a minimum wage.
Yep.
How the heck did they get around the unions on that one?
Well, they won't. I mean, there's going to be there are lawsuits galore because they have broken. There was an attorney for the firefighters union in Scranton who was asked what laws have they broken and would the union be suing Scranton over, and he replied, "You name them, they broke it." So, it's just going to take a while to unfold, and it's an alarming situation. You know, the answer to the economic woes that Wall Street and the corporations have caused and brought us to our knees, the answer isn't to take what's left of the middle class and then turn those workers into poverty-level workers. I don't want to see it happen to firefighters and police, and certainly don't want to see it happen to the workers we represent, the people who maintain the streets, who staff our libraries, who help teachers prepare our kids. It shouldn't happen to anyone.
No,
I know I don't think AFSCME is involved with this group, but the nursing home strike recently in Connecticut, there are 450 strikers out there.
I was at the picket line today in Newington, Connecticut, actually.
You do? Oh.
So how?
Yeah,
how
We brought a couple of cases of water and I spent a couple hours with the strikers and it was very it was kind of emotional. I was talking. These are all women. They're CNA certified nursing aides. There's this corporation Health Bridge and they're just brutal, greedy corporation. And what struck me, I was talking to a group of four strikers who were kind of taking a break because of the heat. So they were sitting in some chairs in the shade, and I was speaking with them. And two of them, I asked them, how many years each of you have, and, 7, 13, 18. The one who's been there 18 years at the nursing home in Newington Healthcare, said, this is my second home, and I feel like I've been locked out of my second home. And I said, how are you holding up in the heat? And they said, well, it's not fun. This woman said, I'd rather be inside with my second family. And that's how they feel. They care about, I don't have to tell you, in nursing homes, you're dealing with people at the end of the line who often don't even have family or friends coming to visit them.
Right.
And,
this company
really
has supposedly already hired 450 other people and just totally disregarded the union.
Yep. Yeah. It's a really ugly situation if, people go to www.nehc, NCEU.org. That's the New England Healthcare Employees Union. .org. You know, they have a list of the five nursing homes around the state, and you know, and if you can't, they're around kind of, you know, New Haven, Hartford area, and if people can't make it out there, you know, make a contribution to the Solidarity Fund, because, like I said, it really struck me when the worker said, you know, that's my second family. They don't want to be on a strike. They were forced out by the, you know, these bottom feeding corporations that have taken over.
What was the conflict?
Well, the company, you know, the company is called HealthBridge, and they have gone ahead. They have refused to bargain in good faith. They want to slash, eliminate, you know, healthcare, pension. The whole bag of tricks that all these corporations are using, and they've refused to bargain in good faith. And even Governor Malloy showed up at the picket line last week and said what this company's doing is particularly egregious because they're not even making an attempt to bargain through the differences. And they've as you said, brought in scabs, and, you know, it's ugly.
Will a state be of any help, the Attorney General maybe?
Yeah, he
was actually at the picket line, I think, yesterday, because I saw one of the news clips, you know, had a shot of him there. But, you know, what's happening at these HealthBridge nursing homes is really indicative of this attack on unions in the middle class, because when you ask what the solution is, well, you know, the legal solution foremost is to go through the National Labor Relations Board. Well, the Republicans have been battling Obama. They fight every nominee to the board. They're trying to make sure that the NLRB can't get its work done. So, you know, in better days, you know, this is the board that heard these cases. They expedited them. You know, they held trials. And, you know, all that will happen. But, you know, it could take two or more years for that to happen. So, you know. So.
In the meantime, what happens to our workers?
Exactly. And, you know, and that's why I say this is really, really tragic. I mean, you know, if corporations perceive an attack on them, they have all kinds of legal firepower to fight back. But when regular working people try to do that, the legal process suddenly becomes delay. And, it, you know, as you know, the saying goes, justice delayed is justice denied.
Yeah, and that mountain is just too high to climb for the average person.
Yeah,
I mean,
you know, again, we're talking about women, many of them are single moms, and you know, they're making, you know, a relatively low hourly wage with health care, maybe, you know, a very humble IRA-type, you know, savings plan, and so, you know, it's difficult. They work multiple jobs sometimes to make ends meet. And, you know, again, if you want to look at the battleground in terms of the assault on middle America, on working America and unions, I think that these nursing homes, who are not AFSCME members, are emblematic of that fight. They don't have the legal and financial firepower, but, you know, what they do have is incredible grit and incredible will to try and last it out. And so I just hope people, you know, people can't show up on a picket line, there are five of them around the state, make a contribution to the Solidarity Fund. And again, it's www.nehceu.org, and all the information on the HealthBridge strike is right up on their homepage.
Listen, I wanted to also ask you about the people in the 450 people. Where did they come from? How did they hire them suddenly? And what was
and so quickly?
Yeah.
Well, what I saw today, and again, I was only there for a couple hours, but you got to understand, union busting is, and I know you do understand, is a big business. It's a lucrative business. These healthcare concerns, you know, and they're not about healthcare; they're about turning profit. They hire union busting firms. They have companies where they find the scabs. They get them trained, prepped. They put them up in cheap, sleazy motels, and they bus them and drive them in. It's a business.
Well, these are all the people they're replacing are all nursing people, aren't they? Certified
CNAs.
Yes, they would. My guess is that they are. Although, who knows? You know, they claim, you know,
yeah,
to have their workers fully licensed, but who knows? I don't believe that. So what I saw today on the picket line.
By the time you got the paperwork checked on that, it would be months down the road.
Right, and you know who's checking, because you know the fox is now guarding the hen house.
Right.
Yeah.
What I saw today, I saw out of state license plates.
You did.
So I saw cars from Pennsylvania and New York that were driving in and out. These companies cast a net probably nationwide. And, you know, this is sad. People are desperate. People will go to any lengths to try to get a little bit of money in their pocket. Obviously, me personally, I'd rather starve or be unemployed than break, you know, a strike and cross a picket line. I just couldn't do that morally. But, you know, I don't want to be that high and mighty that I wouldn't say that people are struggling. And the recruiting is much easier these days. It's easier for these anti-union, union-busting companies to find people because folks are desperate, you know.
Yeah.
Their houses are being foreclosed on. They're trying to make ends meet. And instead of banding together, unfortunately, some workers choose to turn on each other. And, again, that's to the delight and the pleasure of the corporations who are calling the shots. I never want to see that happen.
How is our union getting along with Dan Malloy? How do you think that's going as the governor of our state? Is he proving to be a sympathetic union supporter, you think?
Yeah, that's a great question. As you know, I know you guys religiously check out the news clips I send, and you know, he was at the Health Bridge strike last week, and you know, a reporter actually asked me, you know, does this show that there's a little less tension? And you know, I've never doubted the governor's belief that unions are important and have a vital role. Is he great to work for? Of course not. You know, he's the employer.
Mm-hmm.
Is he trying to balance many constituencies simultaneously? Yes. You know, he's always been reluctant to raise taxes on the wealthy and to close the loopholes. There are things I'd like to see him do, but I do believe that he fundamentally believes, I do believe this, he has a fundamental belief that workers have a right to organize and bargain collectively, whether they're private or public sector. And I do believe that he has, and genuinely believe that he's tried to carve a different path than, you know, Chris Christie in New Jersey or Scott Walker in Wisconsin. I do believe that, but I also believe he's trying to satisfy many constituencies, and that can be hard, you know. Sometimes I'd like him to tell the business community, you know, shut up. You know, you guys are gloom and doom, and you guys.
turning the page to the national politics here, I noticed on the Ask Me page, Sanders has come out a number of times against Romney, but what's your opinion here of this Bain mess? Do you think there's, it looks to me like it's a complete lie. I mean, it looks to me like the guy worked at least two to three years longer than he said he did at Bain, you know, as a CEO. How do you read it?
What's your take on that?
Yeah, and what's your take on
it? You know, my take on it is that, to me, you know, and again, you know, we live in a capitalist society. I understand that. I believe that a Romney presidency would send a signal to that, you know, vulture capitalism is in full force, and that it's okay to behave recklessly when investing and safeguarding people's assets, that it's okay to displace homeowners and businesses, you know, that it's okay to pursue short-term profit at the expense of long-term stability. So, I mean, clearly, this is a guy who has to answer questions. You know, about Bain and about his own willingness to pay taxes that are commensurate in terms of fairness with other Americans. And, you know, he just hasn't answered those questions. So
no, and he only wants to release 2 years of tax returns.
Yeah,
I'm wondering, you know, what's in those other years that he's trying to hide? Because apparently when he was running for governor of Massachusetts, he had no trouble releasing, what, 20 years of tax returns or something?
But, you know, that was small potatoes compared to this.
Yes.
And
did you hear the leader,
quote-unquote leader of the free world, should be willing to reveal his tax returns and explain why he has sheltered so much of his good fortune. Now,
did you hear about McCain's comment yesterday?
He said he should release the information, correct?
Oh, no, he said, well, yeah, that, but he said that in 2008, the reason he didn't consider Romney was because Palin was a far superior candidate.
That's,
said, oh,
that's
my
boy, there, you can't get much. That's talking about a shot to the nuts.
Well, that's a good thing for Obama.
they got him.
Palin was better. I just think, you know, again, I think Romney's got to explain. Did Bain, you know, the extent of what Bain did. Now, look, if you think it's acceptable to buy out companies, that engage in this whole process of offshoring and encourage investment in anywhere but America, fine, just say so. You know, just say, yeah, my company put people out of work. It took over businesses. It made them viable assets to be sold. You know, say it. If you have millions and millions of dollars stashed away in Switzerland or Bermuda, say it. Just say, you know what, I'm a rich guy and I don't want to pay taxes here. I just want honesty from this guy. You know, he wants to be the president of the United States. And if he thinks it's, people should be legally dodging their taxes and while evading a moral responsibility for fairness, just say so. I know, that's all I want.
The guy has a Swiss bank account,
all right? A lot of rich people do that.
Sure.
You know, say I'm rich and I don't believe in paying taxes. I just want honesty.
Yeah.
You know.
And I'd like to see what that Swiss bank account is.
Right. you want to run for president, and you're stashing money everywhere but this country. And by the way, you know, his father was a prominent politician. Former governor of Michigan, Senator Romney, George Romney.
Yeah.
You know, Mitt Romney came in, you know, inherited wealth.
Sure.
And I think this is another issue. You know, this isn't a guy who actually, like, you know, built his own business. Everything was handed to him.
The other interesting thing, Larry, that close ties with Israel that he has is that the guy who was Bain, his actual partner, was also a Mossad agent. Did you ever know that?
No.
Yeah. This is nationally known news.
But let me say this. You know, I don't even know that Romney, you know, cares that much.
But he had extremely close ties with
yeah,
with his.
You know what my point is that
of Israeli intelligence.
Yeah.
You
know? Romney will pander to whomever he has to pander to.
Oh,
That seems to be pretty clear, doesn't it? But
in fact, he'll pander to everybody but unions, so.
Yeah. It's given new meaning to the bane of his existence.
Yeah, so I just think that the person who wants to be president of this country needs to explain why it's preferable for him to stash money and not pay taxes at the same fair rate that the rest of us, that you and I do.
Yeah.
I think they said he's paying at around 15%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so great. You know what? You're a gazillionaire. Explain how you hang on to that money. I could use that advice. You know.
Sorry, you don't belong to that club, Larry.
No,
that's,
I guess not.
For club members.
But imagine he's. Imagine this guy has enabled Obama to kind of shed a lot of the criticism that.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Off.
Yeah.
We have to hold both parties accountable for the Wall Street debacles and the bailout.
Oh man, yeah. Did you hear today? It was so funny. I saw this on the news today. George W. Bush was on, and he is desperately trying to stay out of the limelight. That's why he hasn't done any interviews. And he can't go out of the United States because he's a wanted war criminal. Just like Cheney or Rumsfeld or anyone.
So he can't really travel.
No, he was almost arrested in Canada when he went up there. So he can't even leave his house in Dallas, or Crawford.
Wherever he lives.
But he got on the air with the Hoover Institute or something. He did an interview with him recently. And he just says, no, I don't want anything to do with public. I'm very happy.
Doesn't want any attention.
I want no attention anymore.
That's the first smart thing he did.
Yeah, I know.
I always said when he left office, the next smart thing he does will be the first. So.
Well, I think you're right about that.
So, man,
the last thing any of us need is to hear from that fool. So.
Oh, I know. And I don't think anybody could stomach it. But, what he did, I remember back in 08, when they said there was an article, I think, in the Times, New York Times, or might have been New Yorker, or something. And they said the Bush box, okay, Obama, and no matter what happens who gets elected in 2008, Obama or McCain, they'll both be in a Bush box, okay? In other words, the Bush economy and the Bush wars and everything have put whoever in for the next 3 to 4 years, they said, in a Bush box, okay? That's what they called it. And it's so right, because there's no way you can get out of that. No,
forget 3 or 4 years. It's a generation of economic disaster.
Oh yeah, but I mean, in this case, it was saying that no matter who it is, the guy's trapped. Okay, the president is trapped in this Bush box.
That's an excellent analogy.
I thought it was, yeah. That's why I remembered it. And
you're right about it's not just 3 or 4 years. It's going to be a whole generation. I'm really concerned about the kids that are coming out of college or are trying to go to college, and they're going to be so far in debt, and there aren't the jobs that pay enough to pay off that debt. They'll be enslaved to the money that they owe.
Right. Somebody called them, I was listening to Where We Live on NPR a month ago or so. They had the president of UConn, Susan Herbst, rather, and a caller said, these kids, even UConn, which is like, $20,000 a year, these kids are indentured servants. And, she kind of got huffy and didn't like the question about the expense, but it was a really good analogy that we are creating this generation of indentured servants who
absolutely right
are trying to pay off college debt, and it's crushing.
Yeah, and they have to take any job, so they're working at Starbucks, so they're working at the Y, and right now they're able to say, oh, that's just a temporary job till I get my real job, but for them, the question is, will they ever really get that real job? Because after them will be another whole generation of graduates with better skills and more knowledge.
How do they pay off $100,000?
Oh, God, I don't know how they do that.
On minimum wage jobs. You can't do it.
They can't do it. And
they can't file bankruptcy on that either. So it's like, they can't discharge that student debt. And,
exactly.
But I don't know, Larry.
They're in a tough position, I think.
One thing that's encouraging, Larry, Lee Sanders was saying that, was that asked me, and the unions, I guess, are preparing to put in $100 million in the elections this year, state, local, and federal. So you guys are making a hell of a big commitment.
I don't think we have much of a choice. It's really, it's not easy. We have to just be involved.
What is your rank and file? What's their attitude toward it? Because I know one of the big problems that the Teamsters had was that they were ticked off that so much money was going into politics and not enough into their union. But
look, we have an obligation. You know, our foremost obligation obviously is to bargain good contracts with the employers. But the fact is we can't, we have no choice but to be out there engaging our members and educating them on politics. So is there some pushback? Yeah, but the majority of the members understand that we're in this position because of this terrible trend toward right-wing fanaticism that's attacked unions and made us the enemy. So we have.
What do you think of the who in the state and nationally, aside from I know they're supporting Obama and Biden, but state and local, local elections.
A couple names, and again, I don't. Probably your listeners won't recognize them because they're in other parts of the state. But we have a couple. We've endorsed a couple of people who are union members who are running for the legislature, and it's really given me a lot of energy. One of them is Leo Canty from AFT Connecticut, who's running to represent Windsor, and then we have endorsed the challenger in the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party endorsed a guy in the Norwich area named Tom Reynolds to be the state senator, and that's Edith Prague's seat. She just retired. And Edith was, of course, legendary for, the fight she made on behalf of working people. And the guy who wants to replace her, Tom Reynolds, is not that union-friendly, not that worker-friendly, believes people should have 401ks and not real retirement. So we've endorsed a retired correctional employee, Catherine Austin, who was actually the first select woman of Sprague, which is a small town up in eastern Connecticut, and she's now running for state senate. So, we're trying to identify people who are really, who will walk the walk, and aren't just saying they're for the middle class because it's fashionable and the consultant told them to say it. We're trying to identify union members or everyday working people who want to run for office, win, and actually fight for our values up at the Capitol. So we're trying to focus on that way.
So I think it's really good to be giving your support and to the grassroots, because that's where it begins. And when people begin to see changes at home, they begin to have hope for, a national change.
Did you by any chance check the debate tonight with Republican debate with McMahon and Shays?
No, I have been staying away from comedy this week.
I don't understand where this woman plans to give $500 a month to everybody in Connecticut, or every middle class person in Connecticut.
Where's it
going to
come from?
How is she going to give that much money to everybody?
She is so carefully scripted. She's so carefully scripted. And look, I just can't even dignify it with a comment. She has no plan. She can't speak extemporaneously. And, she's what's wrong with the system, millions of dollars of her own money being spent to buy an election.
Can you tell me how is Susan Bicevich hanging on? Who are her supporters?
I don't know the answer to that question, but I can't see a very happy outcome for her on primary.
No,
I can't either. I don't know why
she struggled in that last election. She couldn't run because
she wasn't
qualified, and that kind of tarnished her image. And then I'm surprised that she's running.
Right, and she also had a problem where she was when she was Secretary of State, she was compiling voter lists to further her own ambitions rather than as part of the job.
She's got some issues. That huge bungle that she did with the e-voting machines with no verification of ballots or anything. Spent millions and millions of dollars.
But I wondered who, Leo and I were both wondering who was supporting her and who was behind her. I was surprised at that.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I haven't looked closely at the donor list, but, you know, she's trailing, you know, in every measurable aspect from, you know, money to, you know, expected turnout results. So,
yeah.
So hopefully, you know, it'll be turn Chris's, Chris Murphy.
So basically Murphy, it'll be probably Murphy and Shays probably will be the two.
You think Shays will beat McMahon?
I think so. He's been around so long. And a lot of people don't trust McMahon, so I don't know.
I actually think in some ways he would be I'd rather see I know and like Chris Murphy, and in some ways I think
but I mean as far as
Shays would be a more formidable opponent.
I think so too. And I think that Lieberman had more Republican support than he did Democrat support.
Right.
You know, in the last election he ran. In fact, he had to run as an independent. He didn't have any Democrat support. But
he didn't deserve any Democrat support.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
But anyway.
Well, we appreciate you coming on
and keeping
us up to date on everything that's happening with the union. And we really appreciate all that AFSCME is doing to try to keep the middle class the middle class.
Thank you for all you're doing.
Yeah, we're trying to do this Wednesday night regularly now, weekly exclusive union issues night. Just because there's nobody talking, nobody out there that we know on this entire network that we're on has any pro-union stance. It's all intertwined somehow, or it's all conservative talk or, you know, something else.
So we want a night for this,
you know, and I think this fits rather nicely in our format. So.
Yeah, we appreciate your...
Love. Yeah, we appreciate anything you can send our way on any news.
I'm on that, by the way, so we'll talk separately. But
that's great. But any news you can send our way,
or any individuals that you think would be good to interview, we'd appreciate that too.
Yeah, it would be great.
Good.
You know,
I'll do that. Thank you.
Keep it out there.
Okay.
So, right. Thanks so much, Larry.
Thanks so much,
Leo. Be well.
Good night, Larry.
Good
night. That was Larry Dorman, Public Affairs Coordinator for AFSCME.
For AFSCME Union.
In Council 4 in New Britain, Connecticut.
Right, and what I want to do now...
And you can go to their website.
Yep.
It's a very, very good website. I should say our website, because I'm a member there.
You're a member, right. And it's Council4.org. You can also go to a great site. It's the AFSCME site. And they asked me to blog, and they get a lot of information on that site. Now, there's one more we're going to do a little music break here, and I want to. I've got a great old song, and it was just. There's a new video up on YouTube, and I wish you'd
see it. Oh, you like this song?
But it's Do Re Mi. You ain't got the Do Re Mi.
Woody Guthrie.
But Occupy Wall Street. Somebody put this together for Occupy Wall Street, and so there's a lot of, it's a good video, but you've got the Woody Guthrie music.
Well, you better
background.
Play it, because
so here we
just
go.
Have enough time to have it.
And it's called Do Re Mi.
Hot old dusty way to the California line. Across the desert sands they roll, getting out of that old dust bowl. They think they're going to a sugar bowl, but here's what they find. Now the police at the port of entry say, you're number 14,000 for today. Oh, if you ain't got the do-re-mi, folks, you ain't got the do-re-mi. Why, you better go back to beautiful Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Georgia, Tennessee. California is a garden of Eden, a paradise to live in or see. But believe it or not, you won't harm or take your vacation by the mountains or sea. Don't swap your old cow for a car. You better stay right where you are. You better take this little tip from me, 'cause I look through the want ads every day. But the headlines on the papers always say, if you ain't got the do re mi, boys, you ain't got the do re mi, why, you better go back to beautiful Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Georgia, Tennessee. California is a garden of Eden, a paradise to live in or see. But believe it or not, you won't find it so hot if you ain't got the do-re-mi.
Now, what's really interesting is that song is as relevant today as it was when it was written.
Yeah.
In the Depression, I would guess.
Yeah, it was.
And yeah, because right. We are in a depression, and you know what? It ain't fun if you don't have the do-re-mi.
Do-re-mi, yeah, you know. And
it wasn't fun then, and it isn't fun now.
And that's when the unions were so important.
That's right.
You know, and they worked hard to organize workers and get them, you know, get them to...
to have workers'
yeah,
rights.
Yeah, you know.
The ability to organize, the ability to get a fair wage, the ability to have a retirement and a pension, just like the 1%. You don't see, you know, their wages being slashed.
Yeah.
To make up for all the money that they stole and squandered.
And I got, we're going to leave you with one more. I was going to read something else, but Tear the Fascists Down, boy. I think that's so
real.
That's
a good one. That's by Woody Guthrie,
yeah,
too.
And, you know, Tear the Fascists Down. I mean, you're talking about Hitler, but, my God, he's talking about...
Well, we have a lot of fascists
we're
here.
The fascists here now, the corporate fascists. So let's end with this one. Tear the Fascists Down by Woody Guthrie. And join me, by the way, tomorrow night, right here.
So we'll go out with this. So
yeah,
we'll play this and we'll say good night, folks.
Good night, everybody. And
think about this song.
Yeah, I guess.
Oh.
I hope it plays. It's supposed to play. Here we go.
There it goes.
Tear the Fascists Down. The fascists get this one.
There it is.
Fascists Down. There we go. Okay, here we go.
There it goes.
There's a great and a bloody fight around this whole world tonight. In the battle of bombs and shrapnel rain, Hitler told the world around he would tear our union down. But our union's gonna break them slavery chains. Our union's gonna break them slavery chains. I walked up on a mountain in the middle of the sky. Could see every farm and every town. I could see all the people in this whole wide world. That's the union and tear the fascists down, down, down. That's the union and tear the fascists down. When I think of the men and the ships going down while the Russians fight on across the dawn, there's London in ruins and Paris in chains. Good people, what are we waiting on? Good people, what are we waiting on? So I thank the Soviets and the mighty Chinese vets, the allies, the whole wide world around. To the battling British, thanks, you can have 10 million Yanks if it takes them to tear the fascists down, down, down. If it takes them to tear the fascists down. But when I think of the ships and the men going down and the Russians fight on across the dawn, there's London in ruins and Paris in chains. Good people, what are we waiting on? Good people, what are we waiting on? So I thank the Soviets and the mighty Chinese vets, the allies, the whole wide world around. To the battling British, thanks, you can have 10 million Yanks. If it takes them to tear the fascists down, down, down. If it takes them to tear the fascists down.
you, Woody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, folks. He's a great guy, Woody Guthrie.